presentation is loading. There's two things I think that sort of brought me here today. And first of all, actually, I want to back up a second and say, I'd love to make this interactive. I don't want to, you know, bleed into other people's time, but I do, if you have questions, if you want to stop me along the way, I will adjust my presentation accordingly. So feel free to do that. So the two things that sort of got me personally here today were, I got tired of going to meetings and hearing people in communities who had very legitimate environmental health concerns who were not able to find help within the governmental public health system, who were, you know, sent around and around and around and never got an answer. And, you know, really, I felt like something needed to be done. And I work at APHL, so what can the laboratories do, you know, that could actually help communities start to better understand their environmental exposures? So that was one thing that I found very frustrating. The second thing that I found very frustrating was the fact that we have built tremendous chemistry capability in the state public health laboratories through CDC's Public Health Preparedness Program. And fortunately for our country, there have been very few, if any, opportunities or chemical terrorism incidents where we've actually had to use this capability. So a lot of times it is not being utilized or it's being underutilized. So I thought, how can we better utilize the capability and capacity that exists in the state and local laboratories to help answer some of these community questions? So that's where I'm coming from. I have no disclosures or relationships to report. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about sort of, I think, where historically we've gotten to that I think a national biomonitoring system is a good idea. Policymakers, the public, the media, people are concerned about chemicals and health. More people than ever are buying organic. They're looking for non-toxic labels. There's a lot of headlines about BPA in bottles, about phthalates, about all sorts of things. And people really are concerned. I think, in particular, people are concerned, A, because they don't always understand it, and B, because sometimes it's out of their control. And I think, you know, when you can't control an exposure, it really bothers you. So this slide bothers me a little bit because it's called the old way of estimating exposure, and it makes me feel old because this is the way that I learned how to estimate exposure. I adapted this from Eric Sampson, who used to be the head of the laboratory at NCEH, and he's actually now a liaison between EPA or between FDA and CDC. But the old way of estimating exposure was a mathematical modeling, and this still happens. I mean, we still use it. I'm saying it's the old way, or Eric Sampson said it was. But the idea was you could measure contaminants in air, water, and soil, and plug that into a mathematical model along with some other things, some anthropomorphic measurements, you know, height, weight, body, personal habits, things like that, and you could predict the level of toxicants in people. The new way of estimating exposure, and I'm great at stealing slides because when I see a good one, I like to grab it. So this is adapted from Tom Burke of Hopkins, is to look at the levels of pollution in people because ultimately that is what we're worried about. I mean, yes, we're interested in levels in the environment because what is that doing to our health? That is the ultimate question. And so what is getting into us? The great thing about biomonitoring is that it integrates exposure across all of these different sources of exposure and pathways. So let me take a step back because there's a lot of different definitions of biomonitoring out there. EPA has a different one. Department of Homeland Security has a different one. Well, the one that the Association of Public Health Laboratories uses is this, and we try to keep it simple, the measurement of chemicals in the human body. This is a slide I sort of adapted the statistics that EWG presented at a meeting, I guess about 3 years ago now. The United States spends $200 million a year to look for chemicals in soil. That's just soil. I don't know what they do for air. I don't know what they do for water. $200 million a year to look for chemicals in soil. And the United States spends $13 million a year looking for chemicals in people. Now, I'm not saying it's not important to look for chemicals in the environment. I think it is important. And there's a lot of reasons why we should do it. But I think there's a huge inequality, and I think that we need to balance this equation out a little bit more. So I tried to get into your minds, and I tried to think a little bit about, you know, as they're listening to me, what are they going to be wondering? And I can't address all of those issues because there's probably lots of questions that you're wondering about. But one of the biggest questions was, well, doesn't CDC do this? Doesn't CDC do biomonitoring? Why do we need a national biomonitoring system? We have the National Biomonitoring Program at CDC. And this is a picture of the fourth national report on human exposure to environmental chemicals. The reason that we're talking about what we're talking about today is you can't take this data and use it to describe an exposure in at a state or a local level. There's not enough people part of this study. There's not enough statistical power to be able to use this data at the state or local level. So it's a very important program, but it's not as helpful when you're actually talking about community concerns or state concerns. So what do we do? What is APHL doing about this, other than whining to you today a little bit, maybe, hopefully not? We developed what we call our National Biomonitoring Plan for public health laboratories. It's a 5-year plan. And we're 2 years into it, Jennifer? Okay. She looks like a deer in headlights. Jennifer does all the work on this. I get to stand up here and take credit for it, but she does all the work on it. She's right here in the front. So we're about 2 years into this National Biomonitoring Plan. What was the idea? Well, the idea was we need to build a network within the laboratories. All these laboratories, like I said, have all this capability and capacity to do chemical analysis. And some of them are doing it. But they don't all know what each other's doing. They don't all know what capability and capacity exists in the other laboratories. And so we needed to pull them together so that they could communicate, so they could collaborate, so they could share best practices, so they could reach out to a broader community beyond the laboratories, to academics, to epidemiologists, to toxicologists, to anybody out there who could use some of this capability and capacity. So we're working to create this network of laboratories. But at the same time, we recognize laboratories are not, they don't work in a vacuum. This is truly a system. Biomonitoring involves so many other players that are just as important as the laboratory. And so what we did is we had a national biomonitoring meeting after the 2009 National Environmental Conference in Atlanta, and we pulled together all of these folks that I just listed, epidemiologists, academics, toxicologists, basically, you know, anybody that we could get to come that was interested. And we came up with some recommendations. And the main recommendation was that we should create a system for biomonitoring to happen at the state and local level. So that, well, I'll get to the reasons why next. But we tried to define what we even meant by a national biomonitoring system. And I'm still not completely loving the definition. It's hard to define a system, but this is what we came up with at the meeting. It reflects the integration of the disciplines, technologies, and expertise to identify sources of exposure, to answer questions about potential health effects, to respond to community concerns. That one was, I was very excited about that one, and to improve environmental health and policies. All good things, hopefully. And what we felt that this would enable, what would the benefits be, was a more coordinated approach, more effective use of limited resources. You know, the more you coordinate and collaborate, higher quality data, and I'll get to why we thought that that would happen in a second, and improved practice and data sharing. You know, we can create communities of practice that can better talk and better share their data. So at this meeting, we also identified the next steps toward building a national biomonitoring system. And there were some boring ones like finalize, you know, the meeting minutes, and I just put up the interesting ones here. So they were to collaborate with partner organizations to develop best practices, to continue communications across the disciplines, to build awareness and support, and to improve communication with the public. And we've been working on this, and that's a little bit about why we're here today. We wanted to update the community and get some feedback from you to find out, you know, what have we been doing the right thing? What else do we need to do? What are the next steps after these next steps? So we worked with the National Conference of State Legislatures, and they wrote a best practices for state legislators who are interested in developing legislation to support biomonitoring. There are several states who already have legislation in place, or at least introduced, and so we were able to pull together some of the best practices that was already out there. Our APHLs has a biomonitoring subcommittee that has spent a year of tremendous work, thanks to Jennifer and Heidi, in pulling together a guidance document for laboratories who want to do biomonitoring. It's about 40 pages long, and it was a consensus document. So imagine, you know, a group of people working on a 40-page document. And what it addresses, it's almost done. What it addresses is the necessary laboratory infrastructure. So if you want to do a study, here's what you need to have in place physically. The study design and how important it is to collaborate with epidemiologists and with public health departments. How to select a biomarker. And how to choose an analytical protocol and methodology, and also how to report the results. APHL also created, this is one of the more exciting areas, a database. You know, I tell a story that when I was in grad school, I had 494 blood samples that I needed to get analyzed for mercury. And there was nobody at Hopkins there was no laboratory at Hopkins that could do it. And my advisor said, well, the only person I know that can do it is up in Wadsworth in Albany. So I had to drive up the New Jersey Turnpike with a trunk full of blood samples on dry ice, and it was not a fun experience. I actually ended up driving along the side of the road because there was so much traffic, and I thought if the cop pulls me over, I'll just scare him with the dry ice and the blood samples. But anyway, I ended up, when I came to APHL, I was talking to the Virginia lab director. I live in Baltimore. And he said, you could have come to Virginia to do that. So I could have been home on the weekends, you know. So anyway, so what we did is we created a database. And the idea being that laboratories can put in their capability and their capacity. And anybody who is interested in working with a laboratory to do a biomonitoring study, whether it's another laboratory or someday we hope to open it up to academics, students, maybe even communities, can search this database to find who can do what they're interested in doing. We're always looking for success stories. We pulled together success stories, and more than willing to share those with you. Actually, they're at the APHL's table in the exhibit hall. And that's it. It looks like I have 5 minutes left. So I wrote in here that I have questions, but we're holding questions till the end. But I want feedback. I want people to tell us, are we missing the boat? You know, what can we be doing better? Where do we need to go next? What do you all need from us? And just ideas for the future. So CLIA is the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments. It's a law that Congress passed that any laboratory who is doing diagnostic work, that is actually doing patient specimens, needs to follow certain procedures. And that addresses laboratory sort of standard operating procedures and quality assurance and quality control. This goes way beyond CLIA. I mean, we kind of assume that a laboratory doing biomonitoring would probably have CLIA certification already in place. So that's an underlying assumption throughout this.
I work in New York, and we try to develop a laboratory that do things like mercury. And it's just all the regulations that are involved, you have to have a laboratory director, and so the techniques and standard operating procedures were not the hurdle. There's all certifications on top of that.
Yeah.
And you can't measure chemicals without that certification.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. You can't really do this work without a lot of certifications. And the lucky thing is, all the laboratories that we've been working with, basically APHL's member laboratories, have all of those certifications already in place. So they've already passed these hurdles. They already have a lot of the infrastructure in place. They already have a lot of the personnel who are trained in this area in place. So that was part of the reason I came here today, was because a lot of this was already in place and it wasn't being utilized, I think, to its fullest potential. Do you mind if I'm taking questions? Because I have 5 minutes, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll warn you. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you envision creating sort of research interest guidelines, such as issues of bioaccumulation, small environmental exposures over the long term that might relate to things that would be of interest to everyone as a system or a network, so that people noticing rises in a particular element or chemical in Virginia might 10 years from now connect with people in Albany?
I think that's a great goal, and I would love to see that someday, but we've been sort of taking it one step at a time at this point. But yes, I mean, I would love to be able to see this result in a lot more data for states and locals, so that over time we are able to identify worrying trends in exposures. So yes, that would be one great outcome.
I do a lot of work with our community in San Diego through the Center for Public Health. And I'm very much pro biomonitoring, but I also have concerns that people tend to focus on the persistent ones.
Mm-hmm.
In our community, traffic is a huge exposure. Benzene is horrible, has a very short half life.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not going to find it, but it's very bad for them. You have to be very
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. You know, due to half-lives, due to the toxicokinetics, toxicodynamics of certain chemicals, biomonitoring does not always make sense. Or it might not always give you what you want. And that's why we really emphasize that you really need to get, you know, the epidemiologists and the toxicologists and the laboratorians working on this together. Am I out of time?
Take one more question.
Okay. I think she was.
Quick comment. Because the beginning had the old models, the new models, and I think that the two need to work in tandem because,
yes.
You know, biomonitoring is just a measure of everything. You
yep.
can't really decipher what pathways and also. So you need to focus on, because just even to answer her question,
yeah.
too. So it's not, I didn't want people to leave thinking, oh, you know, that's antiquated.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the point that she's making is biomonitoring doesn't tell you where you're getting your exposure from. It just tells you you're exposed. And so looking in the environment to figure out where the exposure is coming from, you know, the old way of estimating exposure is still a good way of doing it. I think they complement each other, and thank you for bringing that up.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to pretend now that Megan has left. And that that Juliana Nassif has arrived.